Okay.
Agenda item four, COVID-19 response and recovery. Can I open that up to members? Are there any questions to the relevant cabinet member?
Chris.
Beg your pardon, the councillor.
Chair, we're not having a presentation?
Yeah, I was just going to ask if...
Chris Ashman.
Chris Ashman would like to speak on that, please, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and many thanks to allocating time for considering again the current position with regard to the COVID response and recovery. The committee has been posted to the Cabinet report, which is considered on the 11th of June. And as we're all aware, this is a continuing, evolving situation that requires dynamic response by not just the council, but a whole range of organisations in the public and the private sector, and of course our communities on the island as well. And I think the main message that came across in that paper that still persists is that the island is still in a response mode. We still have the risk of a recurrence of the pandemic, and we clearly are still need to plan and prepare and be vigilant around the risk of that. So the emergency planning approach that has kicked off as a result of the emergency is still in place and continues to be sustained. But understandably, that process involves two key elements. One is the response to the incident, which I touched on a few minutes ago. How do the organisations that have a statutory role and responsibility to dealing with emergencies come together and deal with it? And what generally happens is once that incident, for example, take a flooding incident, for example, once that incident is complete, then the recovery stage kicks in. So how can that be remedied? What are the resources that need to be brought to bear, etc.? As I said a few minutes ago, unfortunately, we're in an unprecedented situation here. So the system of response and then recovery is being tested to the limit. So we keep the response approach needed to resource that, and the significant commitments that redeployment of staff, resourcing from the government to support our response approach needs to continue. But we clearly need to start thinking around recovery as well. And that's what the paper sets out in terms of both at a regional level, we're part of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Local Resilience Forum that looks at these issues on a regional level, but also because of our unique geographic circumstances, the island requiring its own approach to how it recovers from this pandemic. So if any of the members have read the report, they'll see that it's quite wide-ranging. Around some key areas, around the humanitarian and social issues that the pandemic has caused, you know, the impacts potentially around the mental well-being of communities. It obviously references the economic impacts and clearly the risks associated with our economy and our businesses recovering from the lockdown arrangements that we've put in place. And it challenges us to think differently about our environment and our infrastructure as well, in terms of clearly some of the vulnerabilities that we experience, particularly as an island community, have been exposed through this process, and obviously challenges then to think about that in terms of recovery. I think for the relevance for this committee, Chair, I think it's important that the section in the report which talks about us sense checking now our key strategies and our plans. As to they need to be COVID-proof in that sense, I think it's probably the one where the committee needs to take an ongoing interest, and obviously the comments today of the committee around the issues related, particularly to the neighbourhoods and regeneration agenda, will be really important in informing that development of that recovery plan. As I said in wrapping up, Chair, it's not a case of the incident is over, we now need to start recovering. We're going to be in this situation of managing response prior to the beginning of recovery, at least for the next 12-month period. And we are in this this milestone relationship at the moment where the government has obviously announced key issues around easing the lockdown and managing those safely and obviously to try and support support effective restoration of services. I just want to sign off on you, Chair. I'm sure some of the other members of the committee will comment on these matters, but I think it's worth us noting again in this committee, as we have been in other places, what a fantastic response by the people and businesses of the island to the incident, and the way in which communities have really set aside past differences in some cases and come together to rally around and respond to that. And I will pay respect obviously to the government as well in terms of the way in which they mobilise their resource to support our island businesses in particular, and obviously in the regeneration context. I'm particularly hopeful and confident because of the support arrangements that have been put in place, we'll see as many businesses coming out of the lockdown successfully as we could have expected. So I'll pause there, Chair, and take any further comments and questions, and obviously keep the committee updated as our recovery plans develop.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ashburn. That's very informative. I can open now to Councillor Evans would like to ask a question.
Thank you, Chair. It's all right. Chris, for giving us an update. Obviously, things change very, very quickly, don't they, at the moment. But my observation is that actually now is probably one of the most delicate and fragile times, as we now open up to hospitality. Hopefully, we're getting some ferries back over soon, and perhaps Councillor Whittle can update us on that shortly. And we'll be welcoming visitors back, and also from businesses, they're now allowed to get people back on furlough part time. So it's a very, very delicate time, I would suggest. Whereas we've got to balance out people's confidence in returning to hospitality venues, to the high street, and we've still got this issue that we have to still take great care, you know, social distance, we still have to do the washing of the hands, all the things that we've been told to do. That message hasn't gone away, and I just think observationally, I think there's a section of the general public that maybe just think it is all over, and I think they then put off other people that are still very much in the mindset, you know, this is an active virus, we need to do everything we can. So I was just wondering about Chris, if you had any reflections back from the Institute of Fiscal Studies report that we had 2 weeks ago, pinpointing the island and Torbay as areas where we are really at risk of an economic downturn due to our demographics, and obviously our work profile as well.
See in now.
Healthcare, that's the biggest employer. You've got retail. Our high streets are very much under the microscope at the moment. So I just want to have some reflections on that, and I think we need to take a more serious look about how we present our town centres, not only for our Indigenous population as they come back into their regular shopping, but you know, we've got these wonderful videos that Visit Isle of Wight have done, but then how now are we reflecting that back in our town and village centres, because they need to be welcoming, safe environments, as I have to say, the government, I agree with you, Chris, and the government's been really, very helpful, especially for the High Street Task Force. Anyway, so I could go on about this for quite some time. You probably realise I'm quite enthusiastic about all this. But yeah, so if you could answer that question, possibly Chris, about the around the physical studies particularly, I think that's the key one.
Mr. Ashman,
yeah. Obviously, any report that is taken by our August Institute, and particularly in a time of crisis, will needs to be given serious consideration. And I think that the three key for the other members who may not have read the report, the three key domains which have come together to provide this aggregated risk for the Isle of Wight are around the reliance on the tourism economy as a key part of our overall economic base, the tourism and hospitality sector, their ability to recover from the lockdown arrangements, which is a national issue but accentuated in an economy like the island. The age demographic, which you touched on then, constituents Evans, in terms of the levels, particularly those over 60 and 75 on the island, and obviously the risk there connected with the the prevalence and the impact of the disease on those members of the population. And the third is actually, and it's sometimes overlooked, is the pockets of deprivation that exist within, that still remain within our communities. Now, all of those three issues would have been known to this committee. They would have been addressed and highlighted in the regeneration strategy, which we're bringing forward. So in terms of shining a light on those issues on a national level, much as it is obviously a painful to say it, it should help us in terms of any funding applications and support, and further support from government as part of the recovery agenda. So, understanding that we have a plan, that we are trying to progress and address these issues anyway, and they will still continue to be a part, important part of our recovery, will be the message that we need to get across to the government when and if they provide the support for recovery, as opposed to the response agenda that we've been benefiting from so far. I think the point of perception is an important one, and Councillor Jones-Evans makes the right point that it is a very difficult time at the moment in terms of the balancing of the behaviours, as we talk about, with the need to restart that economic offer. And I think the obviously the publication this week of the outbreak control plan would be really the reference point on which to provide confidence to communities that should any local incidences occur, we will obviously have a plan to be able to respond to those so that they don't grow and create further lack of confidence. The wider point on perception, I think, is equally important for various reasons over, not just the IFS report, but also due to our participation in the piloting of the COVID app position. The profile of the island has actually been quite high, and from a regeneration professional's perspective, that's quite an opportunity. So in terms of actually highlighting the island and the benefits that it offers as a place to live and work, and the benefits that people enjoy here as compared to other environments, it's actually an opportunity for us. And I think, obviously the committee's views will be important on this, but I think it will be important for us as an island to think about what message we send to the outside world about how we dealt with this, but also what vision we have for the future of the island as we move into a recovery environment.
Thank you very much. That's a supplementary from Councillor Jones-Evans, and then I'll bring in Councillor Tindall.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. It was just really the question I ask every time I come to the city is, at the Court Council, is where is our £6 million that we're due from the government? So I'm getting our feedback.
Is it Alan?
I don't think there's anything we can do about it in here.
I'm sure our MP, Mr. Seeley, has been loud and clear talk about the Ireland deal, so I know he said that yesterday, so I'll keep my hope going, I'll keep asking.
Thank you.
Councillor Tindall. Right, two questions. First one for you, Chris, is I take it you're working with Wendy Vieira to update the pandemic strategic risk, which is on the register. So anything you've learned about that will change that, which I take it you're going to say yes to. But the second one is most people are still worried about the visitors coming. And as there are only a few points of entry onto the island, are there going to be any checking of people that are coming in, checking their temperature, or anything else, or even asking them to give some information so we know where they are, just to give the people who live on the island a little bit more confidence that we're not going to be swamped by plague-ridden visitors?
I can ask Polly to provide a detailed answer on that to the council if I might, but the arrangements to visit on a wider half promoting with their members is to initiate the detailing of obviously of the addresses and contact details of those who stay in accommodation on the island. So that, again, their contact set as part of the test and trace approach would be available. So I know that particular measure is part of the equation. As far as the public transport arrangements, obviously we're all aware of the requirement now on public transport to wear face masks as a key requirement. My apologies, Councillor, I'm not aware whether there are any other measures being proposed by the companies in terms of temperature checking, all those issues, and we can update the committee specifically in more detail on what their plans are.
So, Matt, just a very brief supplementary. If I could have that for my audit meeting by the 27th of July, that would be helpful. Finished.
Thank you very much, Councillor Tindall. Can I just welcome in Councillor Paul Bertie?
Oh, he's in there.
You are there, Paul. Can you make yourself known?
They said he had joined on the chat bar, didn't he?
Okay, members, are there any further questions? Councillor Jones Evans.
Yeah, sorry, Chair. I thought other members were going to be coming. I didn't want to hold this. Quite easily do so. I was just wondering, A, if we could get that update from Councillor Whittle regarding the ferries. I know he's been championing getting the catamaran back again. And I've also put a question in the box there. Obviously, this is all part of recovery. Now, are we going to be having an update from the Director of Neighbourhoods on the social distancing measures and temporary cycling and walking infrastructure projects, please?
Excellent, thank you.
Can I then invite Councillor Whittle, please?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I think I've got to wait 2 minutes, 2 seconds for them to put me on. Am I here?
Yeah.
Is this evening?
Yeah.
Okay, so the ferries, we've still got complications with the FastCat, which is very distressing when you think that was one of the ferry services that particularly serves the commute and tourism for a sustainable transport. There's many people, even from the near region, come over on their cycles, as you can get more on the fast cat than you can on the hovercraft, and they cycle around, or they get Island Line to Sandown or Shankill and cycle from there and come back. So the fast cat not working is actually affecting our resorts. And what's happening is where the ferry companies, or Whiting in particular, are choosing to direct more people to use the car ferries, they're encouraging more vehicles over here and less sustainable transport, which is disappointing because, not forgetting, the Isle of Wight has lost most of its coach visitors because of national holidays going bust. So the only way we're going to get people coming here is via the train and ferry, which is a rail-to-rail connection, which is very disappointing when you think about the government is funding to the tune of millions across Solent ferries and railways, and we've ended up with one of the only broken rail links in the country. And that's actually excluded people who don't have vehicles from coming here. And I think I was talking to the MP now, he did try to talk to the, what do they call, the Isle of Wight Transport and Infrastructure Board. He sent them a letter, but he didn't have a very good response from them to do with the fast track. However, there's another car ferry going to run from Yarmouth in this month. So there's another car ferry, but I would like to see a better link to Ryde and the other resorts via Island Line. Because not forgetting, we're trying to ask for 60 million off the government to do up Island Line, and they want to spend that money to up the ridership. But at the moment, the ridership is not very good at all. So I would really like to see Whiteley doing their part to get the fast track going from Ryde, as the hover travel is a very good service, but it's not very well linked to the rail. And the other thing I've got the MP working on at the moment is for him to try and lobby the minister to change the message for riding on public transport, because it was they didn't recommend people make non-essential journeys, and even to commute they were saying people were better off using their car or cycling. However, with the new less than 2 metres rule, as long as they're in bench by a mask or a screen, then therefore it should be safe travel, the same as they're saying for aeroplane or anything else. So we really need that message to change, because the ferry companies are claiming there's no demand, even though it's in the Daily Mail that the Isle of Wight and Plymouth or whatever are going to be the best places, hopefully, where people will choose to go because it's a great outdoors. And I just hope that that demand figure will be a realistic one once our ferry operators and rail operators can stop telling the public that they recommend they don't make essential journeys, because it's actually cutting off the island on that route. So we're working on it, Julie, and hopefully we get something.
Thank you, Councillor Whittle, because the thing is, we can't afford to lose this summer, no, virtually any business that's customer facing on the island benefits from our tourism. You know, I challenge anyone who's in that arena that they don't benefit from tourism. So we can't afford to lose this summer, otherwise it would be three winters in a row, essentially, and we'll have, it'll be a famine. It's quite serious. We need to get those ferries running. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, before I go to Councillor Cook, has an observation and then a question from Councillor Ward. There is a question from Wendy Pereira. And the question is, from Wendy. We can provide a more detailed response in relation to temperature testing by our Director of Public Health. So thank you for that. Councillor Quirk, observation, please.
This is a policy and scrutiny committee. It's very difficult to scrutinise what's happening in terms of the regeneration and return to normality, because that's very much work in progress. In terms of policy, it sounds as if we're going in the right direction. Possibly we should give some encouragement to actually open up tourism on the island, and the stuff that Wayne is telling us about, and also to do that in a safe way, and sort of making sure that we are addressing the public realm and making that same as well, and continue to make that same, but in a realistic way.
Thank you very much. Yes, response from Councillor Whittle, please.
Yes, Visit Isle of Wight are in the middle of making a safety video to go on the ferries telling visitors how to be safe on the island. And obviously they're doing these online training meetings for all of our various sectors. At the same time, they're making a separate film that will be played on the ferries when people come over here, telling them how to visit our island safely, how to visit the different destinations safely and businesses, and what to do if they think that there is a problem with COVID-19 and what they have to do. So there is safety guidance going to be in place for that. And there's also going to be, there's a lovely advertisement that they can go on social media with at the moment. And I'd recommend you all have a look at it. It's lovely meeting of the island, saying the island is waiting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Whittle. Councillor Ward has a question. Ian, you need to unmute yourself, please.
I just wanted to add to the discussion about ferries. The Infrastructure Task Force met with the ferry companies on Monday, and I know Wayne's feelings towards the fast cat, and the answer from Whitelink is there's no demand, and I raised Wayne's question is how can you raise demand if it's not running? So, and they came to say, I'll tell you the answers. As you probably realise, that the fast cat passengers are being channelled towards Hover Travel or the car ferry. Okay. The Hover Travel say that even with the confined passengers, their occupancy levels are about 67% on average. They say that normally 10,000 people a day cross between the island and the mainland. That's down to 1,000 at the moment. Southwestern Railway also say that the travel rail usage is very low. It's rising slightly now, but there are no, even the, you know, the traffic from Portsmouth to London isn't growing significantly. It's quite difficult actually. Red Funnel, as you know, have started the RegJet on a very limited service, and they say they 40% of their the RegJet are only 40% occupied on their very limited journeys. Okay. So once again, there's no real great demand there. Although Wayne's worried about cars coming across, but Southern Vectors actually transfer people from Ryde to Fishbourne, pick them up and bring them back, if need be. On the other side of the Solent, Hover Travel running a shuttle bus from the Hover Travel terminal to Portsmouth railway station, so the harbour station. So the route is covered. Obviously, it takes longer, and it's not a great incentive to travel. Okay, I think Ian will have to realise that. We the council, are going to try and delve deeper into Whitelink's rationale. You know, because the fast cat is important to us. We all know that. And if we can, you know, get it back up and running, it will benefit us all. But of course, I mean, some people also don't want it running. They don't want them coming across here. And I know that that affects the business community greatly, but there is this divided opinion that's going on at the moment. I mean, I heard several comments when we saw all the Bournemouth stuff on TV, and people were saying, thank goodness for the ferries, because they can't come over here. So there is a divide of opinion, and I wouldn't like to say who's right or who's wrong. Okay, I just want to add that there was an intensive discussion on Monday about this, and we're going to look deeper into it. That's it, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor James Evans, you have a question for Colin Rowland.
It was just I put it in the box. Are we going to get an update from the Director of Neighbourhoods regarding the, I'll get my question up again, social distancing measures to date, the future on them, and the temporary cycling walking infrastructure? I believe there's that the government have provided some funding to get some temporary stuff in.
Yeah,
And I think for Newport and Rye, particularly with their LC whips in place, a great opportunity here.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rowland?
Thank you, Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Yes. In terms of social distancing, we've now completed the round of signs, tent tools, and 2 metre spacing. We Shanklin, Sandown, Ventnor, Newport, Ryde, Cowes, and Yarmouth. As I said, these are signs pencils with 2 metre spacing dots in those town areas. That also goes together with the messages and the advice we've been providing to businesses. So we've been providing lots of collateral information to the individual businesses to support them reopening and to provide them advice as to how they can operate queues both within their businesses and outside their businesses as well. Decision has been taken to leave the works as they are now because we've done most of the town centres. We have put those out as that statement of intent, meeting government guidance and providing that support to businesses to reopen. The intention is that all short-term measures, are a statement of intent and they're intended to be there for at least the next 12 weeks. The paint that's actually been provided, the stenciling and the painting on the ground, is intended to be washed away within the period of about a year. So they're not permanent markings. Now any other further measures that we intend to do in any of the towns needs to be obviously in consultation with the towns themselves and with business groups, and that will form more longer term to medium term measures that we want to introduce as part of reopening towns in that longer period. So that's a sort of an update on the social distancing measures. In terms of the cycling and walking, there's an initial £62,000 that's been made available by the government for us to introduce some cycling and walking measures. We are in the process now of working those up. Some of them came from the, all the schemes came from the LCWIP. We're now looking at those in terms of traffic impacts and actually drawing them up. We've got a delivery period of about 6 to 8 weeks to put those on the ground.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rowland.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rowland, for that update. Look forward to, I think most of the town villages look forward to be able to supplement the social distancing in a sort of a more sort of a friendly way. I've had some feedback from people who's coming into my business saying it, the red and white measures makes them feel quite anxious because it's sort of a danger warning kind of sign. So I've seen other areas have more a different approach. So I'm really glad to hear that individual communities can talk about the next stage. That's really good. How we're talking regarding the walking and cycling. You mentioned about traffic impact. How do we balance that? This obviously because making more space for people on the bike or walking is probably pretty much going to have an impact on vehicle movement. So how do we circle that square with making this happen, and then hopefully we'll get people out of their cars. So we want that demand for that space for vehicles may go down. So I think it's a very difficult. Sorry, use this as a difficult road to cross, but I think we always have to sort of take that leap of faith that this is going in the right direction. Obviously, this is what the government want us to do as well, for have healthier communities. As Mr. Ashman said earlier, our pockets of deprivation, they're often linked to very poor environments as well. So I think this is really needs to be thought of in the round, rather than just as a strategic network, and I'm going to get my car, my vehicle from A to B. We've got to think this in the round. We really do have to think about our general well-being, and I've been really sort of pondering on this because it is a difficult thing with our road network on the island. We're very, very limited in what we can do, but we need to, as Councillor Quirk said, we'd have to think about our public rail. It's very, very important. We're promoting the island as a place of great digital connection, great lifestyle choices, very healthy place to live, beautiful place to live. All of this, this to me is the missing link, creating this sustainable transport network, with the West White the cycleway, getting the permeability into our main towns, having commuter works, and when you're actually in a town, you'll be able to walk around without fear of getting one over. I know it's a big job, but I'm so pleased the government have given some funding so that we can start our journey. So thank you very much for the work you're doing on this.
Thank you very much. Can I just remind members, if they do have a question, to actually not type it in the message bar, but actually request that they want to ask one question. So, Councillor Quirk, please.
Just in regard to cycling, at two times in my past career, I've worked in Milton Keynes. It has a very high level of cycling usage, but it achieves it by keeping the cycles and the cars on separate pieces of tarmac. And I think it's something, if you're looking at a really encouraging a high level of cycling usage, that's something that you really need to start to think about. Cars and cycles don't actually mix very well on high-speed roads.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Do you have any more questions
for me? No.
Okay. Wonderful. We go on to agenda item 5. Public